This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
What a crazy finish to WWE Hell in a Cell 2018 that was! I'm Ollie Davis, this is the other one Luke Owen. Welcome to the Hell in a Cell review edition of Wrestle Ramble, where, overall, I'd say a pretty good show. We went in on our predictions show when it went up on Thursday or Friday, whenever it was, and we said, hey, if people get enough time to wrestle, the talent is there to be an entertaining show. The one thing where WWE usually screw it up is the finishes. But for the large part of this show, the finishes were really innovative. Maybe too many roll-ups, but that's a nitpick. But they were smart finishes, and I really enjoyed some of them were very, very inspired. Apart from the main event.
Yes. Yeah, so I mean, I thought it was actually, also, it was a very good show.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it was amazing. You kind of wake up to the people on Twitter going like, worst show ever, can't believe they booked this, how bad was it, worst show ever. And I'm like, I thought it was pretty good, actually. For them, I thought the first 2 hours in particular were excellent.
Yeah.
Like, among, like, the best that WWE has done all year.
Yes, it's definitely up there.
Yeah.
And we said it, like, sometimes these B pay-per-views are the sleeper hits.
Yeah.
It might get lost in the shuffle of WWE's we need to chuck everything at the wall mentality. But this was a solid show, I thought.
Yeah, I thought this was really, really excellent. I really enjoyed the in-ring action in particular. I thought it was all very good. The Raw tag match was...
Stole the show.
Yeah, and I was watching it going like, I mean, this might be probably one of the best matches that WWE have done on pay-per-view this year.
Yeah.
The other one I could think of was the Rollins-Miz match at whichever pay-per-view it was that they opened with. Remember they opened with that, like it was
Rollins Balor as well.
No, that was on a Mania. This was just Rollins and Miz,
okay.
And it was like an opener for the show, and everyone was like, "That was absolutely amazing."
I
think it was actually Backlash, funnily enough.
But the we're talking first off about that main event finish.
Yes, So the point I was going to get to eventually was that it was weird as well because like. I wasn't really that into this match. I found myself being easily distracted because it was like 3 hours and 20 minutes into the show. I was like, I've been watching this since 5 a.m.
Yeah.
I'm almost ready for this to be done now. I've seen a lot of Roman Braun matches, but, you know, hey, try and impress me.
Foley's there.
And
the
I'm like,
Hell in a Cell's red.
I was like, I'm trying to get into this, but I did find myself being slightly distracted by it. But I thought all the smoke and mirrors that they put around it were genuinely very good. Like, it was really, really good.
So let's go through what happened here. Reigns and Strowman had what you said was a okay match.
Yeah, the weakest that these two have had. And these two have had some awesome matches, but like they've had some really, really great matches. But this was certainly at the weaker end of their outings.
Yeah, and it's not through lack of trying because they got out loads of different weapons, but it was, and I like big move, but I don't know, it didn't work here. It was just Superman punch, weapon hit.
Chokeslam.
Yeah, chokeslam. Chokeslam on the apron was cool from Braun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and there was a spot early on where Foley did seem to count three. And Strowman seemed legit annoyed.
And the crowd were annoyed as well, because they thought it was the finish too.
That would have been amazing. And so you get, like, I would say 15 minutes or maybe 10, 15 minutes of this rather plodded. Like, it was fine, but, you know, it's in the main event spot. We've been impressed all night. It's in Hell in a Cell. Foley's there. And it was just a... It was just a normal Hell in a... Well, not even a Hell in a Cell match. It was just a normal, hardcore match.
It did not feel main event.
No. And then the WWE must have predicted this happening, because out came the smoke and mirrors.
Oh, and there were smoke and mirrors aplenty.
Yeah, maybe that should be Drew and Dolph's tag team name. Smoke and mirrors.
It was almost like Cody Rhodes had come down with, "Whoa, you're only smoke and mirrors."
Yeah. And... So Roman takes out Braun with a spear. A spear so devastating, neither man would get up for another 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was a spear through the table. And Vinny...
Set up in the corner.
Yeah, Brian and Vinny... Well, Vinny on the Brian and Vinny show said this in their review of the show. Was like, okay, so imagine you're Roman and Braun. And the WWE team have come up to you and said, like, oh, cool, so in your main event match, you're going to do a spot, and then you're going to have to lie down for 15 minutes... And then someone else is going to run in. They're going to both attack you, and the match isn't going to have a finish. And he was like, now imagine being you. It's like, would you bother trying? Like, would you bother trying in the match?
Sure. Out of context, you take that as an isolated incident, you'll be like, what the hell's going on here? But in the grander scheme of WWE, I bet both men were like, oh, thank God. We're fine with that one, actually.
Yeah.
Because this is to WWE's credit, so much craziness happened that I wasn't annoyed. Apparently people in the arena were annoyed that the finish wasn't definitive in the end. We'll get to how it happened. But I was so impressed with all the shocks, particularly one.
Yeah, absolutely. One of them I did not see coming whatsoever. Mm. And I would say, though, that although I really did enjoy the smoke and mirrors, I think it says a lot about the match that there are five people we're going to talk about, and all five of them were not actually in the match itself.
Okay,
there were eight people involved in this match, really, and five of them were the ones we're going to talk about, and three of them were actually advertised.
Yeah. Nine if you count Heyman.
Yeah, I was going to say, absolutely. And he did get involved.
So Roman takes out Braun with this epic spear, this 20-minute selling long spear.
It was such a powerful spear that Roman sold it.
Yes, that's a good point.
Roman really...
The recoil.
Oh, God, that hurt.
Braun's been working out. His core is so strong.
He's doing that DDPY.
Yeah, it's like spearing a washboard. And Dolph Ziggler, smoke and mirrors come out.
Yep.
Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. And they're trying to get into the cell. Not as strong as someone who would come out later. And they can't open the cell door. And then the Shield run down, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, and they start fisticuffing. Dolph looks around the arena. You know, he sees there's a barricade with a clear exit. There's the ramp. I could possibly run round the ring and go up there. No, he climbs up the cage. Well, the best way to get away.
He did try and get over the barricade, but they put a stop to that.
But there's, there were still more.
But it was like, you know, remember in the old days when the Shield used to get into the ring, and there's three of them, and they would all crowd onto the ring, and everyone was like, there's no escape. There's another side. There's like another exit you could get out of.
Yeah, there's four sides to a square.
Exactly.
Michael Cole's screaming, there's no way out.
There's no escape.
Yeah.
Ziggler thought, and Corey tried to cover it, and he was like, the only place he can go is up the cell. It's the only place he can escape to. I guess.
But fair enough. That's wrestling.
Absolutely.
We accept these things.
It's Hell in a Cell match. People climb up the cage. That's what you expect these days.
So Dolph goes up there with Seth hot on his heels, and they start, and it's always spectacular, especially when you get those wide shots of how big that structure is.
Yeah, it was really impressive.
And they're so high up, and every step you can see the foot push down on the mesh to go below the bar on the hard cam perspective. And yeah, they're having a little brawl, but uh-oh, here's big man Drew coming up. He looked crazy going up there. He's such a large human.
Yeah.
To climb up the side of the cage, his fingers must be in agony.
Well, it was a much more padded cage this year. That's why it's red, is because it's rubber now, as opposed to being wire mesh. So the percentage to put rubber around it, so it's much safer for people to take bumps into. That's a good thing in my books. Yeah. It's the same with the elimination chamber. Lovely stuff. Let's protect people. Good, lovely. So it probably didn't hurt as much this time because he's just climbing up rubber.
Mm.
If he was climbing up wire mesh, that would have hurt.
Yeah. So Drew gets up there, and Dolph and Drew get the better of Seth. But then here comes Crazy Dean with a kendo stick.
And I actually thought they did two moments in this show really, really well, and it was around the same two people.
Mm.
They kind of like built up this idea that Dean versus Drew McIntyre is a dream match that people really want to see. They did it during the tag match when they sort of squared off. The crowd were like, oh yes, I really want to see this. And I myself was like, yeah, I really want to see this.
Yeah.
And then they did it again up at the top of the cell when Dolph and Seth went off one way, and all of a sudden you're just left with Dean and Drew, and they did the hockey fight, and the crowd went crazy for it. And I was like, they've done a really good job here in one show of building this up as a dream match I want to see.
That was really cool. And they do like a quadruple down.
Yeah.
And that was the point where I was like, wait a second. This is technically a six-person down.
Yes. A hexa down. There's still two people down in the ring, still selling it.
And it just looks spectacular. And then Seth and Dolph start to climb down the side of the cage. There's the hockey fight spot.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about finishes here for the pay-per-view and this match in particular. Where was the finish to Drew and Dean?
Well, it's a bit
Are they still up there?
Do you remember when we did our Wrestle Ramble Extra review of Hell in a Cell 2000 when The Undertaker essentially force-pushed...
Armageddon 2000.
Armageddon 2000. What did I say?
Hell in a Cell 2000.
Nope. Well, it was
back in a day where they're naming after fun things rather than gimmicks.
Yeah. No, sorry. The Hell in a Cell match at Armageddon 2000 is more what I meant. And Undertaker did that force push of Rikishi.
The choke push.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was so devastating to the Undertaker that he just fell down.
Yeah.
That's what happened to Dean and Drew here. They just clotheslined each other. And it was because it was so high up, you know, vertigo and all that, they just had to stay. They had to stay down.
In kayfabe, that's an awkward climb back down the cage. When the match is over, you're just like, well, you know.
Got to get down now.
But yeah, just, shall I go this way? You go that, okay. I'm still angry with
you. Can't keep fighting, the pay-per-view fee's gone.
Yeah, so Seth and Dolph are fighting on the, sort of like midway up through the cage wall. There's that rung where they could put their feet, and they're both like, the commentary table was cleared before they went up there.
Phew.
Yep, don't want to hurt yourselves. But actually, you don't.
You don't.
So that's good.
That's good.
And they're brawling. And yeah, they shuffle a bit to the side. They've got the right trajectory. That
was probably like moving into position for it, yeah. And they did it was the Hell in a Cell 2015. Seth and Dean did this exact same bump and exact same spot. Yeah, in their Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah, because it was, it does take me out of it when I can see what they're obviously building up, but I have no qualms of trying to take this bump as safely as possible. Still high up. It's above the turnbuckle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a turnbuckle to the outside through the commentary table. It's a hellacious move to take. So they both crash through the commentary table, and I was like, well, that's cool. This is fun, actually. Like, they've taken away from the boring Roman Braun stuff. Dun, 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 dun. I'm like, what? No, huh? That genuinely caught by surprise.
Yeah.
I thought this was incredible. There are very few times in our position where we keep up to date with every single rumor and every single report and backstage things. And it's our job to like overly speculate on things as well when we do predictions. Neither of us ever predicted that Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman would return here. It was awesome.
Do you know what the funniest thing was? You hear that music so little, I didn't know who it was at first.
No.
It was like, and I was like, I recognise that music. Who is it? Because they didn't show it at first. They just showed the cell and they showed the music and the crowd going like crazy for it. And I was like, I know the music. I can't think what it is. And then as soon as I saw Lesnar, I was like, oh my God, it's Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
And Heyman's there. And I was genuinely like, it was a brilliant surprise. Like, so, so good. But I was really into it because of the Smoke and Mirrors. Because Smoke and Mirrors versus The Shield, I was massively into this.
It's a great feud.
But when Lesnar came down as well, I was like, oh my, I didn't see this coming. I was so into this now. And Michael Cole's got a new thing at the moment, I think.
Oh,
and this almost feels like it's a direct reply to those who say that WWE is too predictable. Because he also said this 2 weeks ago, these exact words, and I'm guessing they're fed words by Vince McMahon. No one in a million years would have predicted this would have happened. When The Undertaker came back at Raw, he said those exact words. No one in a million years would have predicted that The Undertaker was here tonight.
when we all figured, when PW Insider reported that. So apparently, it was known a couple of hours beforehand that Brock was backstage. Really glad I didn't see that report.
I was going to say, well, I on the day of pay-per-views, I stay away from like news websites or anything like that, because I had Sting debuting in WWE ruined because of that.
So Lesnar comes out with a beard.
Yeah, it looks great.
So he's in UFC mode. Paul Heyman's there with him. It's the whole package. And he comes down. He looks at the door that Drew and Dolph had struggled over.
Heyman's there. Unlock it. Unlock it. And the ref's going, I can't unlock it. Heyman just, Lesnar just takes one look at it and just boots it in and just kicks the door down.
And it awesomely fell in, and he could use it as a ramp to walk up and
so
go
badass.
Over onto the ring apron.
It was so awesome.
Yeah. And then Heyman's there. He gets the pepper spray out and sprays Foley. I like that spot. I think that's going to get missed in all of the craziness, because that directly ties back to when Paul turned on Roman in the SummerSlam build. So that's like Paul's little thing. Ha-ha.
Do you think,
look at my flower. That would be better if he was like a clown.
Do you think they're going to build to Roman and Mick versus Paul and Brock?
Oh, yeah.
At the Saudi show.
Yeah, the way they're going with mixed tag matches. Yeah. Why not? And it was just... I really didn't see it coming. It was an excellent surprise.
Yeah, it really was.
And it's... So sometimes when people come back, you're like, well, you know, they needed to have stayed out longer. Like, this is only 4 weeks since
SummerSlam, yeah.
But this one worked. Like, yeah. It's not a hard and fast rule. This really, really worked.
I thought this was excellent.
One of the better moments of the year in WWE.
It really was.
And considering all, like, the ill will that was directed towards Lesnar at the end of his... And that's WWE's booking's fault, but just like that he wasn't defending the title and it strung out forever. And to have him come back and he feels completely refreshed, well, bloody well done.
But as far as we could tell, he's only going to be here till November, because the report is that he's here because of the Saudi Arabia show, money talks and all that. So he's going to do one more date for the Saudi Arabia show in November, and then he's off again back to UFC because he's got his UFC fight in January.
Yeah, which makes sense. And then he probably can come back
for Mania.
For Mania. I mean, that's more Brock than we got when he was champion.
Yeah.
So
I can't remember who tweeted it now. It says like, oh, now you decide to show up, Brock.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, when he's not champion.
He's not champion. Not even
all over the show.
Not even booked for the show.
So he comes down and then he gets a bit of the broken table and he clobbers Braun with it. And he hits Braun with an F5. And then he hits Roman with an F5 on top of Braun.
Yeah, no regard for either man in that scenario. It looked amazing.
And then he walked off and everyone's like, oh my God, that was amazing. And then the pay-per-view just went, okay, we're done.
Yeah, that was it. Like, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so into this match now. I was really into Smoke and Mirrors versus The Shield. I was massively into Brock coming down. I was like, now this match has just kicked up a gear. I cannot wait to see what happens next. And then it was like, new official's down. He's ruled it a no contest. Tune in for Raw. And then the pay-per-view ended. And
it was
like,
so quick. We ran out of time.
I was like, wait, what? And then, yeah, it just ended.
Yeah.
And from the reports are that they ended it so quickly because they didn't want the negative crowd reaction, which they're going to get because it's a main event without a finish. And they usually do get heavily booed. They didn't want that coming across on TV. They did the same thing with SummerSlam last month. After Roman, like as soon as Roman won, to cut the feed because we don't want to have the negative crowd reaction on the network. And they just did it again here. And it literally was like, it just came to an end. I thought my network was broken. Like it ended so abruptly.
It's a real shame.
And it is a real shame. And that's exactly what I was just about to say. It's a real shame. Because I was just so into this at that point. When Lesnar was walking off, I was like, this has just kicked up a gear. Man, what's going to happen next? Oh, it's over. And I'm like, oh. And that's my negative feeling on this now. It's like, and it's how you leave them, folks, as you often say. And unfortunately, this left me a bit cold, which is a shame.
So there's multiple reasons why this is bad as well. You've got the whole element of building up this match with the Mick Foley 20 years since the hellacious Hell in a Cell bump with The Undertaker at King of the Ring 1998.
Built to nothing.
That match was not called off.
No.
And that had a lot more, that had like significantly more dangerous things happen in it.
Well, in the very first Hell in a Cell between Michaels and The Undertaker, Kane came down, ripped the door off, and he interfered and tombstoned people and like hit people with plunder. That match still had a finish. That match continued.
Yeah, so there is a historical precedent of Hell in a Cell matches not ending in a no contest and definitively having a winner no matter what happens. But it's not just a historical precedent. It's a precedent that was set at the start of the night in the Randy Orton-Jeff Hardy match, where Hardy takes a pretty crazy bump off the top of the cage through a table, and the EMTs rush down right away, and the referee's like, we got to call this match off. Randy says, do your damn job, and he pins Hardy, and the referee counts the pin.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, those are the rules that you've established at the start of the night.
Well, I think the rules they established there is that a match can be called off.
No, but they didn't, because Orton was like, no, that's not how Hell in a Cell matches
work. Well, that's Orton's a heel. I guess. I'm just playing devil's advocate
playing devil's
here.
Sure, you're Pritchard. You've been a Pritchard.
Been Pritchard-ing it.
So those are two elements to it. But the last one for me is Brock F5'd Roman on top of Braun. That is a covering position.
He bounced off.
But if he didn't bounce off,
yeah,
and Brock walks off, Foley is like confused. 1, 2, 3. That's all you needed to do. I get you don't want to beat Braun, but enough stuff happened here.
But it protects him, though.
Yeah, because Lesnar. I mean, you needed more happening. Well, that's down,
it, yeah.
Down there in between that spear and 15 minutes later, Lesnar comes out. But there are ways to book round that too. Just have some action going on in the ring while there's stuff going on up above.
Well,
cross cutting. Well, that's how Star Wars is so exciting in the last act.
Well, this is why this was my issue. I took with the finish was that at the pay per view at SummerSlam, like Lesnar delivered 400 F5s to Roman Reigns and he kept getting back up. Here he hits one and it's like, well, that's too much. Call the match off.
Well, Roman's shoulder from the spear. Yeah.
And Braun was he's always been standing up from F5 as well. So it just felt weird that it was just both men just got given one F5 and then that was it.
Mm.
I think, as you said, you could have had a finish. I was just my notes here was like Lesnar has left utter carnage in the ring, man. And then it's like, wait, there's no finish. What? Neither man can continue. Like, what's this?
Yeah. And the way to have you have an actual finish, you set up a Braun Lesnar feud. You set up Roman Braun rematch. You set up Roman and Lesnar. I know none of those dynamics are actually that interesting, but it's better than nothing.
Well, I'd imagine it'll be a triple threat match at Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, possibly. Or that great tag match that we can't see with Foley.
Yeah, maybe Foley will be there. I mean, the Saudi Prince does love 90s WWF, so.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The pre-show had the New Day versus Rusev Day on it, which I didn't really mind. I don't like it when the pre-shows get stacked with about three meaningless matches. But having this tag match here as just like the one match, it got like 10 minutes, and it was a good match.
Yeah.
I like the position of this. I like, you know, this was a long show. It was 3 hours 50.
3 hours 40, I think it was in total.
On the main card, and with the pre-show, that's 4 hours 40, which is just
so
way
long.
Too long. But usually, I don't know, it was an 8-match card in total. Usually that length is reserved for a 12 to 14 match card.
Yeah.
And I preferred longer matches.
I was totally fine with this. I mean, I saw over the weekend a lot of people who were upset that this was the match that got moved to the pre-show. But looking at the rest of the card, like, what match would you have moved to the pre-show over this one?
Yeah. So I didn't mind.
No, actually. I didn't mind it either.
But it is quite sad. The New Day cut a promo at the start saying, this is the fourth Hell in a Cell in a row that we have defended the tag team championships at.
Really?
And you're like, wow, that's impressive.
That is impressive.
And it's on the pre-show.
Again.
But anyway, there's some cute stuff with New Day clearing their throats and English coming out to do his clearing throat Rusev Day entrance. And they have a sort of clear throat off.
A clear off,
much like Ric Flair and Jay Lethal wooing. I rewatched that.
On Impact. So good.
So good. And I want to know what the original script for that segment was.
Oh, because it would have been thrown out.
Yeah.
Because if there was one thing that Ric Flair gave in during his TNA run, it was not an F. Mm-hmm. Like, he had zero Fs to give during that TNA run. He just did whatever he wanted, and it was usually tremendous.
Yeah, I feel like that was originally a 5-minute bit that turned into about a 10-15 minute bit with just woos and elbow dropping suit jackets. But anyway, this match, it was really good. They crammed a lot of stuff in. I thought the standout here was Aiden English.
He's really good. Mm. He is really, really good.
And that's like, everyone was really good. But English had some impressive moves. Did a sent on over the top rope at one point. It was, so Big E did his dive through the ropes on Rusev, the one that makes you go,
oh, I wish he'd stop doing that.
And then, Rusev kind of caught him, and Kofi was out there too, and Aiden did this huge flip dive over the top. It looked awesome.
Yeah, cool.
And then he like threw Big E in, I think, for a really good near fall. English worked over for a bit. Kofi did a vault over the top rope, launched by Big E onto, but that was caught by a Rusev kick.
Yeah.
That was really good too.
But really, this sort of built up into the finish of this and the kind of the story they were telling. Because the previous two matches, well, in the tournament that Rusev Day have had, is that Aiden English has been the one that's helped the team win. Like, he saved Rusev. He took the bullet for Rusev, pulling a Johnny Gargano. Or, like, he was instrumental in them getting the win. So he almost got, like, overconfident here and tagged himself in when Rusev was setting up to hit the match kick and kind of have the match won. And then when he was being worked over, didn't tag out, even though Rusev was there for a tag, and that led to him getting hit with the Trouble in Paradise and getting pinned.
Yeah, and English even locked in the accolade at one point.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, come on, Rusev Day, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
But yeah, the...
The overconfidence of Aiden English.
And Rusev was so close to breaking that up, but Big E kind of had him trapped on the apron.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it looks like this is building. They didn't pay off on it here like you thought, but it's
good.
I prefer a longer build story to this.
As am I.
But yeah, it does seem like they're going to break up Rusev Day and Aiden English, which is a shame.
I've
not really got. It's an interesting story, but really, do I want to see Rusev and English separate, which is the ultimate goal of this, or do I want to see them together? And I want to see them together.
As do I.
I don't think there's money in a Rusev English feud.
No, because it's got pre-show written all over it.
Yeah, but there is money in a Rusev Day act.
Yeah.
So, like, literally, because you can sell calendars and
other merchandise, yeah.
But I thought it was a good match with
some good
show. Storytelling.
Yeah, so, and I'd, as we said, I'd much rather this match be on the pre-show than them just, as I thought they might do like Carmella and R-Truth versus Almas and Vega. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd much rather this be on there, have a good 10-minute match that's had some story going into it, than just having a throwaway match that's there just to break up the Legends panel talking nonsense.
I totally agree. totally agree. The main card had Randy Orton versus Jeff Hardy as the opener, and this was when we got our first look, if you hadn't been on social media earlier in the day, at the Red Hell in a Cell.
What are your thoughts on the Red Hell in a Cell? Because I've seen a lot of people think it looks awful.
It does look awful, but it doesn't look... It's like... I don't care. I haven't really got a strong opinion on it.
I got so many tweets over the weekend. It was like, any thoughts on the Red Hell in a Cell? Any thoughts on this? What do you think of this? And I didn't reply to anything because I just thought, I mean, I don't want to reply back with, I just don't care. Mm. But really, at the end of the day, I don't really care. Like, it looks a bit goofy and it's a bit distracting, but I don't care.
I'd say we're trendsetters here in the Red Room, the murder room of the temporary Wrestle Ramble studio.
And apparently the news is, or the story is, the reason why it's a Red Hell in a Cell is that people were, like, with all the promotion they've been doing for the 20th anniversary of Undertaker versus Mankind at King of the Ring 98, although that was a few months ago, in July 98, they were talking about, like, all this promotion they're doing. That. And Vince just like, wow, that match is really old. We need to have a redesign of the cell. And that was it. So they made it red. And they covered it in rubber, and that's safer.
So the rubber thing is a good idea. And I guess, well, you could just paint it silver, I guess, and you still get that that metal effect.
Gunmetal grey. Yeah, get down to your local Games Workshop and get like a massive vat of it.
I'm a big fan of wrestling embracing more magic illusions. So like stage show tricks... So it doesn't hurt as much, you know, like blood capsules. Yeah. I think that's a much better idea. It looks realistic, and you don't have to bust people open hard way. And you know, to create the illusion of a steel cage, but it's actually rubber is fine. The elimination chamber is different because you can actually see that that's rubber padding, and I think that does take away from those old grates.
Yeah.
But if you could create grates that were made of rubber. Then that's perfect, and it looks like a real steel grate.
Yeah.
It's
I mean, it's a bit goofy, but it's a new toy for them to sell, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. It's going to be a fun new Mattel range.
But just think, if we still had separate branded pay-per-views, we could have had a blue one as well for when SmackDown had their shows.
Oh, it should be half blue.
Yeah, it should really. I mean, it's the best of both brands now.
I'm surprised they didn't write Helena Cell. I'm surprised it wasn't an LED Helena Cell where you could have promos for the WWE Network
with the Connors Cure logo.
Oh yeah.
All over it. Yeah.
Nothing ramps up a blood feud like charity adverts on the side of a cage.
Absolutely.
But it's a Red Helena Cell, and Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy are in it.
Yeah.
So looking at this pay per view, I thought the whole show was pretty terrific, and we were talking about Joe and AJ or Charlotte and Becky deserving the cage more.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I just think none of them should have had the cage, and you should have just had that one cage in the main event.
Yeah.
Because this really, apart from a bit of face scraping at the start and the end spot of Jeff getting on top of a ladder and grabbing onto the top of the ceiling of the cage and swinging back and forth and doing a splash, which I'm not sure what that added to the move than just a ladder.
It's the momentum. Like Marty keeps telling you, it's momentum.
Is that this match really didn't need a cage?
This match was in a cage for one reason, and that's because Jeff Hardy's never done one, and he's nearing the end of his career, and he wanted to do one.
Yeah.
So they did it. That's the only reason this is inside the cell. Fair enough, you know?
No, not fair enough. I don't think people should be handed out stuff. I think it should all make sense for the viewer and it be the best possible dramatically engaging product.
I completely agree with you. I'm not saying that you're wrong, but, you know, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, I guess, and so be it.
Yeah.
Jeff got to have his Hell in a Cell match.
It does matter, damn it!
But actually, I thought this was a really good match. I really, really enjoyed this. And actually, I thought it turned
long.
It did go long, about 20-odd minutes, 25 minutes, which I saw a lot of people take umbrage with and say that it didn't need to go 20, 25 minutes. But I thought it was really decent. I thought they kind of used their time well. Some really sort of good creative spots. I liked the reverse suplex into the upside-down ladder. I thought
that was
brutal.
Cool.
That was really cool.
I've never seen that done before.
Like, they almost turned it into a TLC match inside a Hell in a Cell, which I thought was really nice. And again, that kind of ties into, like, I don't think the commentators told this story, that's, you know, where Jeff sort of made his name in the, you know, the early 2000s during these big ladder things and the TLC matches. But yeah, I suppose the big spot of this was Randy Orton pulling in Jimmy Havoc and grabbing a screwdriver.
Yes.
He's been watching his Jimmy Havoc tapes.
Yeah.
Finally.
Well, this to me, I love spots like this. Spots that are 100% safe. And it's just like the most toe-curling thing you can see. And what happened? Randy Orton gets a toolbox from out the ring. He gets a screwdriver from that. He gets Jeff Hardy and puts the screwdriver through Jeff Hardy's large ear piercing. And he twists it.
Yeah.
And you know, like, lobes can twist easy. That's fine. And for some reason, it just looked awful.
Yeah, it looked gross.
Yeah.
And it really worked. It's the same with, like, the finger in that he did. The finger in, not the fingering.
Yeah.
Although it was fingering, I suppose.
Allegedly.
I think it looks gross and it looks really effective.
Yeah, so other spots are the finger break spot with Marty. That's just a simple, you know, slap of the of the arms on the sides of the body to get that noise. And the paper cut spots in hardcore matches where you, like, everyone goes, ugh! But they're not even touching each other.
Yeah.
Perfectly safe.
Perfectly safe.
I really, really like
it. Do you know what my favourite spot of this match was? My favourite match of this spot just perfectly sums up Randy Orton as a wrestler.
Mm.
So this is, you know, it's a big hardcore match. Randy Orton is this sick, sadistic wrestler at the moment. He's got no regards for anyone's safety. And do you know what he does? He traps Jeff inside a ladder. Like, he gets his head up in the rung, his arms are all twisted in. He's trapped in this ladder. And what does Randy do? He does a couple of stomps and then lets him out.
Ooh.
And I was like, nothing sums up Randy Orton more. Like, any other wrestler would have done a big move. Not Randy, though. He's not putting himself in danger. It's like, anytime they put Randy Orton in a ladder match, he's the person who will just, I'm just going to jump down slightly and just land on my feet very safely. I'm not going above the third rung. Unless I have to. Unless I'm winning, exactly.
Yeah. We've already talked about it. This ended with Jeff, a really good near fall, actually. Jeff reversed an RKO into a twist of fate and then a swanton bomb on a chair on Randy.
Yeah.
And the way Hardy lands those, that was all of Hardy onto that chair, onto Orton. So we do have to give props to Orton for taking that one. But Orton kicked out. Great kick out. I thought that was the end of the match.
Yeah.
And Jeff sets up a small ladder, a big ladder, and a table.
Yes.
And I thought, when he did that, I thought, okay, I know the spot. You get on the small ladder, and you leapfrog
over. You leapfrog over it, yeah.
And you do the leg drop.
So he did it at SummerSlam 2000.
Exactly. But I don't know what the use of the little ladder was.
To give you the leapfrog.
But he didn't do that.
Well, it's because they said that if he'd have done it, he'd have hit his head on the roof. There was no room for him to do it.
Yeah, so why did he set up the
because he didn't realise that until he got up there, I guess.
I thought that was a bit, just a bit.
It was totally contrived. Yeah, a bit messy. And then he sort of monkey bars across and then starts swinging himself, pendulum style, to drop down. Randy Orton had moved probably about 5 minutes before he actually fell.
Yeah, that was awkward.
Yeah, Orton, again, self-preservation, moved like within so much time, gave himself a lot of time to get moving. It's not like Bubba Ray Dudley who would move as Jeff was falling.
Yeah.
No, he waited. Like, he was, as the first chance he got, he left. But it looked like a really cool spot. It was really effective. They shot it very well. And I've seen a few people not like this finish, but I loved this finish of the referee going, like raise the cell, get the EMTs down, and you need help. And Randy was like, do your job.
Mm.
I'm going to pin this man, do your job. And he's there with the cover. He's like, count the pin. Because he doesn't care. He's got no regard for anyone. I really like this as a finish for Randy. I thought it was really cool.
I like it as a finish for Randy, but in the confines of the match, I don't think it, you know, I just don't think it works. That's not what a Hell in a Cell match is.
Mm.
And I just never bought into it. Like, the EMTs were there in a second. Like, they've been waiting there.
Well, of course they've been waiting.
Jeff's wrestling.
Yeah.
So I never bought into this being this big angle that was deserved of calling the match off. And if the match is going to be called up, just, you know, let Orton pin him anyway. So I didn't buy into it that much.
Okay.
But I appreciate Orton being a heel out of it. Orton was busted up.
Yeah, so Jeff's belt had fallen off and they were using it as a weapon. But Randy was a bit smarter and he turned it inside out to hit them with the leather side, whereas Jeff just used the studded bits to hit Randy with and cut his leg up.
Yeah.
See the, like, the skin falling off?
Yeah.
Pretty gross.
Yeah, so there was welts on the back and there was, the leg looked awful.
Yeah, pretty gross.
Yeah, it was a good opener. I thought it went long, but overall, and it didn't need to be in the cage, but overall, good. And good finish for Orton.
Yes.
And this is like we're going to make a big deal of this because WWE do not usually do good, satisfying finishes. I thought this was, throughout the show, good stuff.
Good stuff.
AJ Styles cut a promo on Samoa Joe, and then we got Becky Lynch versus Charlotte in a wonderful match.
Yeah, bit botchy in places. I thought it was a bit sloppy at times, but I thought both of them were really, really, like, they worked really hard in it. But I thought what was interesting is that the video package that started this 100% painted Becky as a heel.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, she turned on her best friend, and that was a real dick thing to do, and she is just the worst. And the commentators throughout this kept putting over, Charlotte is the babyface, you need to be cheering for Charlotte, she's the one that's, you know, she's the hero in all of this, and Becky turned her back on her best friend, and that's a bad thing. Crowd disagreed, because crowd were very much thinking the opposite way of this. Mm. And then right at the end, when Charlotte went to take the handshake and hold her hand up, Becky just walked away. Todd Phillips is there going, like, that's the most disrespectful thing I've ever seen. They were really, like, it almost felt like today they just decided, no, Becky is the heel. We've just got to push her as the heel.
Why are we even entertaining these fans? Yeah. Bro, they'll get off Twitter. She is the heel.
It's almost like Vince McMahon was just like, no, she is the heel in all of this. She has to be the heel. Despite the fact that over the last couple of weeks, it felt like they were moving away from that. So it'll be interesting to see where they take this on SmackDown on Tuesday, in what direction they are taking Becky in now. Because for me, at the end of this match, she was designed to be the heel. She didn't come off as a heel because the crowd are massively into it and cheered when she didn't shake their hands. But the company clearly see her as the heel.
Without a doubt. And Charlotte had that sort of, you know, I'm going to be honourable. You were the better woman on this night.
Yeah.
The handshake is left. Oh, I'm just going to stand here and pout. I'm a sad Charlotte.
But, I'm a sad hero.
But Becky Lynch, like, you know, is a badass.
She looked so awesome.
She didn't shake the hand. Instead, she just raises the belt.
Oh, she looked cool.
Yeah, and like, how can you not cheer for that sort of person? It was badass. It was stone cold. Yeah. Stone cold Becky Lynch.
Absolutely.
But the match overall, I just thought was really nice because it was Becky attacking Charlotte's arm and Charlotte attacking Becky's legs.
Yes.
All based around their respective submissions of the disarmer and the figure eight. A really great story. And what else I liked about this match, not just that, is how back and forth it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm a bit tired of WWE working over the heel, the heel working over the face for 10 minutes and then... It's a bit formulaic to me. But this, I thought, was really intense because it was just Charlotte getting moves, Becky getting moves, Charlotte getting moves, Becky getting... And it just kept on going back and forth, and I thought it gave it a really good pace.
Yeah.
And, yeah, especially grounded around those submission strategies. Yay, boo spot on the floor at one point. I really liked it. And the finish was Charlotte going for a spear, but Becky just rolling her over into a pin and picked up the win.
Really, really nice. I thought it was actually, as I said, I thought it was a bit botchy in places, particularly as you said that the Boston Crab spot when she went to do the dropkick. It was like what we talked about with Brie doing her her suicide dives, where she never had any intention of actually going through the ropes. Like, Becky Lynch had no intention of ever hitting that dropkick, and it very much looked like it because she stopped about a foot short.
Yeah, well, needed to get put in the
Exactly, yeah. And it's things like that. But I thought overall, actually, and the ending, I'm glad to see Becky win. We said this on the prediction show, that because we both predicted Charlotte would win, but we said, storyline-wise, Becky does need to win. Mm. And it makes so much sense for her character for her to win. So I'm so, so glad to be wrong on that one, and so glad that Becky is champ here. Really, really good. But although it depends on how long she remains champ, or if there's going to be one of these things where she's champ up until, like, the Royal Rumble, and then they need to put the belt on someone else to build up a bigger WrestleMania match.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we'll AJ Styles in his first WWE Championship run.
Then we got a backstage segment with The New Day, and I love The New Day.
I thought you might find this annoying.
And I think New Day have done a really good job over the last several months of being the right side of obnoxious. So they're the fun, goofy, wacky, aren't they? They just want to have fun. This segment was grating.
Yeah, it was a bit annoying. Was a bit annoying. The key to it, though, is they announced that they're going to be facing the Bar at Super Showdown.
Mm. Yeah, so it's like Big E, they're all celebrating, and Kofi comes back in his Kramer gimmick with the interviewer thing. And he's
doing the Richard Pryor
voice,
that's when
they reveal.
Yeah.
And they tip a keg of pancakes over Bootyworth, which is fine. And then it cuts back to the audience, and Corey goes, of all the things I've seen, that was the most recent. And I thought that was such a good line. Such a good line for a heel commentator talking about a babyface act. Michael Cole, though, goes, what was that? You're a babyface commentator, Michael.
No.
It's fine for Corey to say that. That works. You should be going, hey, they just, you know, defending the baby faces.
Like Byron and Todd do this so well on SmackDown, where they yuck it up and they laugh while Corey is annoyed by it all.
Yeah.
Before the comments come in, we do know his name's not Todd. Sorry, did you want me to cover for you there while you're taking
water
a sip?
Break.
Sorry.
So yeah, I just New Day were annoying here, and Michael Cole was wrong for his character. But then we got the match of the night.
Easily the match of the night.
Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler versus Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. It was Drew and Dolph working over Seth for the like 5 minutes at the start. Dean gets the hot tag, and from that point, it's just anarchy.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of like working over one guy, then they get the hot tag, then they work over him, and it's building up to a lot of hot tags, but... Man, it was like by the last sort of 5, 6, 7 minutes of this was just like big moves and near falls. And they worked it like it was a main event match. They worked this like they wanted to steal the show. And boy, howdy, did they. Like, yeah. Really, really was. I thought this was excellent. And the finish, I thought, was absolutely awesome.
Inspired.
Absolutely inspired is a great word.
I'd call it the second best finish of the night. Mm. On a night of very good finishes, bar that one at the end. But yeah, like, the thing that surprised me most about this was I bought into so many near falls.
Yes.
And they were near falls of setup moves.
Yeah.
You know, like Seth Rollins hit the frog splash on Drew McIntyre's back.
Yeah.
You never pin a guy off a frog splash to the back.
Nope.
Ask Tanahashi.
I was going to say.
Yeah. He gets up there and does one to the front.
Does another one because you've rolled over by that point, and that's where the high fly flow has all of its impact.
Yeah, the force knocks you onto your back. And, like, I went crazy for that. There was the zigzag from Dolph Ziggler on Seth.
I genuinely thought that was the finish.
And that was after two roll-up reversals, which were near falls in themselves.
Do you know what? Dolph and Seth have really had, like, the best series of matches in WWE this year, on the main roster at the very least. I thought they've had... It's just been great match after great match between these two. Like, no matter what sort of, like, you know, way they're involved in, whether it be tag matches or singles, I thought they've worked really, really well. That Extreme Rules one, notwithstanding, of course.
I would have to go back and look at everything else this year. For some reason, I don't think they're all... Yeah, I feel like there's a better one out there. Authors of Pain Titus Worldwide.
Oh, of course, yeah, of course.
And others.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's not to say that they're not... They don't have great chemistry together. Mm-hmm. And I just some of the spots in it. I really like Drew's belly to belly on Dean into the turnbuckle.
Yeah, Drew is so good. He is absolute money.
Yeah.
To be fed to Roman.
So there's this bit at the end near the finish where Seth goes for a dive over the top rope onto Ziggler, but Ziggler moves and Seth just crashes and burns. And 5 seconds later, Seth is on the other side of the ring for the Dean hot tag.
Yeah.
I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, and it was a really cool spot where he did do the dive and Drew and Dolph catch him.
Mm.
And then here comes Wacky Dean doing a dive onto all three of the men and they all collapse. I thought it was really, really cool.
Yeah, so it was really good. But the finish
was so good.
Was after Rollins got that he somehow got back round for the blind tag, he goes for a superplex on Dolph and he hits that and then, you know, as usual, he rolls through to do the Falcon Arrow. But Drew comes out of nowhere with this claymore onto Seth's head. As Seth falls, Dolph slightly falls on top of him. It's a pin.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, really great. Really, really great. I mean, that's my note here. That was a great match with an awesome finish.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
Good stuff. Then we got Mick Foley warning Braun Strowman backstage about Hell in a Cell took years off my career.
Yep.
And then we got AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe.
Now, it's interesting. When we did our SmackDown Wrestle Ramble, you said that promo that Joe did with Night Night AJ, that really feels like it would be at the start of the match on a pay-per-view because it recaps their entire feud. And I was like, that's a really good point. Why wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, it was here. They literally just replayed it. I was waiting for something to be different. I was like, nope, this is literally just the same promo we saw on Friday, on Tuesday.
Yeah, you got to double up.
Yeah.
Recycling's great for the environment. I like this match. This was my favourite finish of the show.
My favourite finish of the match show as well. I loved this finish
because we'll come on to it. Really, like, you can go very interesting ways with Joe's character from here. However, the match as a whole, like, I can't really fault any of the work, but I just
I wasn't invested in it, I think, because it's so obviously a filler match.
Yes.
In a larger feud. This is just here to pass time until the next encounter. So I just never picked up for me.
You know, like the huge intensity there was in that SummerSlam match where it just felt like it was chaotic and out of control. And that's the story they've supposedly been telling, that Joe has got into AJ's head so much that AJ has become unhinged and he's now not this technically proficient wrestler. He's just out of control. That never really happened here. Mm. This felt like it was a wrestling match between the two. Not to fault either of them, because it was a very good wrestling match between the two. But it was... I think you hit the nail on the head there. It felt like a filler match because we've already announced that they're fighting again at Super Showdown and they're rumoured to be fighting again at SmackDown 1000. So it did feel like, well, we just got to do a stopgap thing here. But with that said, I thought the finish was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, so after... It was a long match with Joe working AJ over, which fits Joe's character, but I wasn't in the mood to see. There were some good spots.
It also struggled because the crowd were not into this because they just had that barn burner in the tag match, and that this was not the match they then needed to see.
I think it was a long show.
It's a long show.
Although it didn't feel as long as some WWE shows usually do. But the finish, yes, was Joe's got the Kikina clutch locked in, and AJ rolls back, so he's flipped over, and Joe's shoulders are on the mat, and the referee counts 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And Joe, like, stands up and is like, yes, I've won. And then he sees that the decision has gone against him.
He doesn't realise until they say, and still WWE champion. And he has this look on his face that's just like, what?
Joe's selling of this was to perfection.
AJ's selling of this was also amazing. Because
really? Oh, I didn't really pick up on
that. I felt that, like, AJ, it's almost like, because, you know, okay, so he tapped out. On the three, you can see that AJ tapped the arm.
And you only show this on the replay after all the celebrations. Yeah.
And it almost felt like AJ had been, like, he'd been put to sleep. So even he didn't realise he'd won. Because he's got the title. Corey Graves put it perfectly when he said, like, Joe does not look like a man who's been defeated. Because AJ is barely able to stand. He's wobbling all over the place trying to hold up the title. His selling of this, I thought, was absolutely spectacular. But Joe was incredible. Because Joe realises that he's lost. And he storms to the outside and he's shouting. I love this as well. He's shouting at Corey Graves, AJ tapped out, AJ tapped out. And Corey goes like, yeah, no, I know he tapped out, he tapped out. And Joe walks away and Corey goes like, I mean, I don't know if he tapped out.
Well, that's it. Like, I said in my review, Joe's this great psychopath character. And he's just going, like, he's chosen AJ Styles because he has the title and he's going to pick him and his family apart. But now, Joe is a psychopath with justice on his side. He is justified in what he's doing because AJ lost that match. The replay showed just before the three count, AJ's... just gently, not taps on the mat, but
tapping
taps Joe's
Joe.
Arm.
So Joe felt the tap.
Yeah, so and that's when he, you know, and Joe, yeah. Why Joe thought he'd won.
And the presentation of this was brilliant as well, because they were like, so Corey Graves was like, we need to see a replay. Have we got a replay that we can see? And the replay they show is the first, you know, footage we saw, which is you can only see the pinfall. Yeah. And they're like, I mean, I can't see what Joe is talking about there. Then you see a bit more of AJ sort of like wobbling around and Joe being all pissed off. And they're like, oh, we've just got another replay in from a different angle. Mm. And that's where you see that AJ tapped out. And I genuinely thought, remember I had my theory that Road Dogg is just recycling storylines from his favourite era of wrestling. I thought they were going to do the big show at Royal Rumble 2000 where he claimed that he won. Because Rock's feet hit the mat first, and I was the rightful winner. I thought they were just going to do that again, but actually they didn't. Joe said, "No, dude, I've got the footage right here. I deserve to be the champion right now."
Well, and it's really interesting where they're going to take this feud now, because AJ as this babyface, he lost, and Joe as this heel, he won.
Yeah,
but that's not the way the decision went. So despite me not being into this feud, like the finish has given me another swell of momentum.
Yeah.
And you were talking about... There's a problem with AJ Styles as champion. He has had a very lengthy title reign now, coming up to a year, because it was last November, where he beat Jinder Mahal so he could face Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series, really. They kind of pulled the plug on the whole Jinder push all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But
and then Triple H beat him in India.
Mm. And then since that... he's had.
It was because Brian Alvarez of Figure Four kind of like requested that someone, you know, how many F finishes has AJ been involved with? How many
screwy finishes?
Screwy finishes, that's a better way to put it. How many screwy finishes has AJ had in his WWE career? And they pointed out that he's had 14 screwy finishes in his WWE career. Five of them have been within 2018 alone. So we're 9 months into the year. Five of those months have seen AJ not have a concrete finish to a match. And Brian Alvarez was talking about, I was like, and that's why I can't really get into AJ Styles matches at the moment, because I'm almost conditioned now to expect them not to be a clean finish.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a really excellent finish and worked so well within this story. Well, it works well within a story. I don't know if it works well within the original story they were telling, but I much prefer this story than the one they've been previously telling. And later on in the show, we'll quickly talk about the backstage segment they had rather than end on it. Joe is like, he's shouting at the referee for missing the tap out, and Paige walks in and she's like, you'll get your rematch at Super Showdown. That you're going to do AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe at Super Showdown. And Joe wants it to be a no DQ match. And this is where I was like, okay, it's already slightly fallen down for me. This would have been more impactful, A, had they not already announced it was going to be AJ Joe at Super Showdown. This is the downside of announcing matches too far in advance. But B, if I'm Samoa Joe, why are you asking for a no DQ match? That match didn't end in a DQ or anything like that. It ended in a submission. Make it a submission match.
Yeah, make that's a good way. Or a two referee.
Yeah, Kikina Clutch versus Calf Crusher. Do it that to make it a submission match. That works in the storyline of the match you're doing, as opposed to a no DQ match, which hasn't really been involved apart from the SummerSlam match.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree. Character-wise, though, interested to see where this goes.
Yes, very interested to see him. And that's kind of what I would say about this. I thought that the SmackDown side of things fared a little bit better than Raw side did. I'm very interested to see SmackDown on Tuesday, so good job.
Yeah, you're right. I'm more interested in SmackDown than I am Raw coming out of this paper.
Yeah.
So, it's time for some Brie-hole.
Oh, yeah.
It's Miz and Maryse versus Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella.
I have seen your score for this, and I think it is generous.
Yeah. I read that quite a few people enjoyed this match.
I didn't.
This was, what a fun match. But I struggle to enjoy any Daniel Bryan pay-per-view match since he's come back. Because every time I'm just like, this isn't what he should be doing.
Yeah.
This is just mid-card filler, and you are taking away any momentum you had with him being cleared to return to the ring.
This match was not built around the Miz versus Daniel Bryan. Miz versus Daniel Bryan was an afterthought in this match. This match was all built around Brie Bella getting her hands on Maryse, which, let's be honest, is the least interesting thing about this feud. And yet they presented it as like, that's the thing that everyone wants to see.
Yeah.
And it really dragged the match down. I get that people thought it was fun. And I thought that some of the spots of Miz, like Maryse tagging out, because the rules are if the Miz is tagged in, then Daniel Bryan has to be in. So they did some fun stuff of like Daniel Bryan would get the hot tag, but Maryse would instantly tag out again. So Miz and Bryan would have to get back in. I thought they worked some of that quite well. But the overall impression of all this is just that they position this as Brie Bella's the most important thing in this match. And she was the least interesting thing there, with the exception of Maryse.
Yeah. I completely agree. There were a few cute bits where Miz had, the it kicks on Bryan and he was looking right at Brie. And later on, they do the stereo yes kicks. And Miz and Bryan worked the majority of the match, which was much better than the women working the majority of the match because they're better wrestlers. But yeah, just Miz and Maryse tried to run away at the end. Brie gets Maryse into the ring, and there's a weird bit where Miz comes in and Brie's like...
Everyone was more or less out of position, yeah, I think.
I need to be distracted by you, Miz, just slightly entering the ring, and then Maryse rolled her up and got the tights.
And it was the lamest looking roll-up. Mm. It looked really bad. The finish was very pants. It was a bit rubbish. And I think everyone was out of position. At one point, I'm almost certain Brie shrugged. Because then she realised that everyone's out of position, she sort of went,
So I haven't been a fan of this feud. I haven't been a fan of Brian's push since he's come back. I think it's so wasteful of someone we're, quite frankly, privileged to have back in the ring. And yeah, I don't care. It's probably the worst match on the show.
I think I'd probably agree with you on that one. And I would say as well that the... And perhaps I'm this is me just being conspiracy theorist, got my tinfoil hat on. But the only reason we have Daniel Bryan wrestling now is because of All In. All In, and that's he probably could have been cleared years ago, but they didn't want to for whatever reason. But with him All In and possibly leaving, he was like, I'm going to leave unless you clear me. They've cleared him, didn't really know what to do with him. So they're just doing this. And they've done nothing with him since coming back because they've never seen him as a star. He was pushed out of necessity because CM Punk left. And they were like, oh, no, dear, now we've got to find a new top guy. I guess it'll be Brian. I think some people like him. That seemed to be the reaction he was given. But it'd be interesting to see, because Gorilla Position on their podcast talking about where you can go next with this feud. And their kind of prediction is that at Super Showdown, Miz is going to win because it's the number one contender to the WWE Championship. Miz will win that match as well and then beat AJ and win the title. Brian wins the Rumble and you culminate this with Brian versus Miz for the WWE title at WrestleMania.
No.
I can't see them doing that either, but I can see them doing Daniel Bryan wins at Super Showdown and then Miz interferes in the match and then you just continue this feud.
I think the right thing to do is Brian wins the belt off AJ and then he can have a feud with Miz, but Brian has a lengthy run with the belt. He should be at the top of SmackDown in the mix with Joe Nakamura and AJ.
The problem there, and you and I talked about this before, actually we talked about this with the Jinder situation when Jinder won the belt last year. It was like, didn't have an issue with Jinder winning the belt. I had an issue with him going from jobbing one week to being the number one contender the following week. It feels at this moment that Daniel Bryan does not deserve to be the number one contender to the WWE Championship. We only think he deserves it because we love Daniel Bryan and we want to see him in a better position. But I don't think he's really, because of the way he's been positioned since his return, he's not in that championship mix.
Well, so when he came back, he was.
Yes, he should have been.
He was facing AJ and stuff, and there was I feel like Bryan has been in the mix, but then Cass came in and kept on interfering, so you have that feud, deal with that. And now this Miz Blood feud is taking him away from the title. So I've always seen this as just filler for when Bryan can go to the title. I disagree. I think he is still main event worthy.
100% he's main event
worthy.
Within kayfabe. Oh, you're thinking of winning kayfabe? Yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean, he barely wins.
But these have just dragged him away from the main prize.
But that's the thing,
the blood feud.
But I know you said he's been dragged away from him, but I've almost never felt like, apart from that one match with AJ, he's not been within an ass's roar of the title. He's never said, I want to be in that WWE Championship picture. He just had that never-ending feud with Big Cass that was lower mid-card at best, and now he's in a mid-card feud with The Miz. And it doesn't really feel like either of those guys are in the position to be that upper mid-card number one contendership position. They should be. They absolutely both should be positioned to that, but the company, for me, and perhaps this is just me, have never positioned them like that.
It's a shame because Miz and Bryan had the potential to be a main event blood feud.
Oh, it really should have been.
Not with a title.
Yeah, it should have been.
You know, like how back in the day you'd have Rock versus Triple H, but you'd also have like Taker versus Stone Cold, and one would be for the title and the other one would just be a blood feud.
Yeah.
That's where these guys should be, but they've watered it down with reality TV show nonsense.
Because they're bigger stars.
Yeah. Ronda Rousey versus Alexa Bliss. Talking of real stars over on Raw. Ronda, I enjoyed this match. I thought there was a lot of good smoke and mirrors again.
Yeah.
To get around Ronda's still relative greenness in the ring. Although, everything she does, I think, looks great, and her selling in particular.
Oh, man, her selling in this match was absolutely, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
But Corey Graves quickly became my favourite commentator when he said that Alicia Fox was dressed like Gozer the Gozerian. It's the bad guy from Ghostbusters.
Okay. Right.
So I was like, so that's big thumbs up there. Yeah. Big thumbs up from me. Best film ever.
Back to Ronda's selling. There's this bit where, so she's selling the ribs, which was an injury she picked up on Raw. And Bliss has her in a kind of stretch to stretch out those ribs. And Ronda's selling it with her face, but she's also kind of doing this pushing away thing with her leg. Like you would. I just thought it was also believable because she has experienced a lot of this pain in real life.
That's it. That's life. When I was watching this, I was like, Ronda's so good at selling rib injuries because she's probably had rib injuries and know what that feels like. So she's just drawing from experience. Her selling was really, really good.
Yeah, whereas I imagine a lot of wrestlers who haven't gone through legit combat sports are selling what they think it would. I mean, they might have had injuries, but they're performance-based injuries rather than actual fight injuries, which are going to be different.
Yeah.
The Mickey and Alicia Fox were on the outside. Natalya was in Ronda's corner, so they would they pulled Alexa out of the ring at one point. I don't know why the referee wasn't more on that. He just kind of let that go. And there was a bit where Ronda just moved out the way. Bliss dived through the ropes onto
that was really nice. Although it was a bit stilted, because like, it was great. Because Ronda just sort of sidesteps her. And she charges and she falls through the ropes into Mickie James. But they catch her first, make sure she's safe.
And then
fall backwards.
Yeah. I think Ronda's finally got the timing of the punch catch down as well.
Yeah.
Rather than the awkward, back in the Luke Skywalker days earlier this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they had that spot. And Natalya takes out the cronies on the outside. Ronda and Bliss do this double crossbody.
Yeah.
For a double down that was really effective. And then Bliss goes to lock something. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I think I kind of what she was going to do, but she started mocking Ronda's mean face. Mm. She was not like, taking the mic. And then Ronda rondered up and actually did
her mean deep face.
And then Alexa screamed. That was a cute spot. She did a gut wrench powerbomb. She gets the armbar and Bliss taps. I mean, the only thing that really surprised me, they did absolutely nothing around Bliss using the armbar.
Yeah,
so that was the whole point of this feud.
That is a shame. I thought it would have been a much better story. I don't know why they dropped that, because that's the story they were telling for 3 weeks.
I know, and then they just stopped doing that and then moved to the ribs instead, which I thought was really bizarre, because we talked about them doing that spot where Bliss gets the armbar in and then Ronda picks her up and does the powerbomb. Mm-hmm. But they did that spot in the Charlotte Becky match, and it was at that point I was like, they're probably not going to do that match later, that spot later.
So what I really liked about all of this, Ronda didn't feel as special as she has done, maybe, because she's getting more exposure, it just like sort of dilutes the presence.
I disagree slightly, but yeah.
There was a bit where Ronda sort of got in the position to lock in the armbar. Not having the armbar locked in, but yeah, I'm going to hurt Bliss now. And just that motion made the crowd go, yeah! I was like, move. A move that's over.
Yeah.
I remember these days. Why aren't all the moves over?
Because, it's a really protected move.
Yeah, and like when you protect a move, you make it feel special, people get excited for it.
Yeah.
So that was nice to see.
I thought this was really, really good. For me, the thing with Ronda, like you said, that she doesn't feel that special. I agree to an extent.
Not as special.
Not as special. And I agree to an extent, because I think that there was more. I just think that she should have lost at SummerSlam, not just because that was our prediction, but because it's at the moment Ronda is undefeated. And it's that you walk into that Asuka situation of everyone's like, well, you can't remain undefeated forever. Mm. And you're like, yeah, I mean, you can't. So the best way around that is just to actually have her. If you had her lose right at the start, then you've removed that element from it. And her chasing the title probably would have been more interesting than just winning the title and defending it.
Mm.
But this is the situation we're in. I think Ronda's excellent. And I think that she was really good in this match. But I was more interested in Ronda in the chase than as champion.
Totally. So overall, I gave this a low 4 out of 5.
I would have given it the exact same score. I thought it was a really, really good pay-per-view. I'm surprised there's been so much negativity. But again, I think it's because the very last moment with that really awful finish to the main event has made everyone sort of like forget about how good the rest of the pay-per-view was and just say that was an awful pay-per-view. Because actually, I thought overall it was excellent.
Even that match, like just that little bit at the end sort of ruined that middle part of the match, which was enormously fun.
Yeah.
But just imagine if they were so close, WWE. If you just left Roman on Braun and you had that clear winner.
Yeah.
It'd have been so satisfying.
Yeah, but you can't cut the network feud quickly, can you? Because they need to remove the booze. So I suppose you can expect a lot of the pay-per-views to get cut quickly moving forward.
The Roman era, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.